This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Loaded show today. Excited to break it all down with you. First up, we're going to talk to Colby Dant of the Sports Gambling Podcast. We're big fans of SGP and all of their content. Of course, you can catch the SGP live show every Friday night on the network with Ryan Kramer and Sean Green. And Colby, an often guest on that program and many others of our shows. We're going to run through a bunch of win totals with Colby. And he actually, because I've already recorded it, got me over the top on betting one of his win totals. So I am in on one of his win totals. It's the last one, so maybe he'll convince you as well. But looking forward to that lengthy conversation with Colby Dant. And then we'll wrap up the podcast, collect a viral, because I know a couple of you, and I'm going to give you one specific shout out here. Hoosier Bear, love you, buddy. Appreciate all of the tweets. I know you love your IU Hoosiers. Congratulations on your 200-1 ticket a year ago. We are going to talk Notre Dame. We're going to do a deep dive on the Irish, mainly because of the news and unfortunate news for Notre Dame with them losing offensive guard Charles Jagasaw to a broken arm in a UTV accident that happened over 4th of July weekend. Pete Sampson, my good friend from The Athletic, what's next for the Irish? How big of a loss is that for Notre Dame? Does that affect what to expect from Notre Dame week one against Miami, full season as well? Funny enough, and I guess funny is the wrong usage, but oddly enough, last year we had Pete on the podcast in August because Charles Jagasaw tore his pectoral muscle in preseason camp, and he was the projected starting left tackle. Anthony Knapp stepped in and did an admirable job. I believe he was a freshman All-American. So we will see how big of a loss that is for the Irish as they open up the season Sunday of Labor Day weekend against Miami. Couple of things I wanted to hit on here in the open before we take a break and welcome in Colby. I had mentioned this before, but I want to mention it again. And this is exciting. And Matt Eumanns and I were talking about this Monday night on VSiN Primetime because so many of us and all of you listening are college football bettors. Obviously, I would say the majority of you bet the NFL as well. And there are plenty of contests in Vegas for the NFL. Circa Millions, Circa Survivor, the Westgate Super Contest. There are plenty of contests out there. The college contests, let's call it what it is, have been not great. There was the William Hill contest. I was a part of that for 2 years. That went away. There was the Golden Nugget contest, which me and Jarrett Smith were fortunate enough 2 years ago to finish top 10 in the money. So that was great. But that is going away as well. And that wasn't a full college contest. So I mentioned this about a month or two ago, and I'm going to mention it again because signups are now open. The Westgate Superbook has the Super Contest College available this year. And I think this is going to be a phenomenal contest. So here are the details. You have it up until August 29th to sign up. It is going to start week one. So note that because in recent years, William Hill's contest did not start until week two, the start of the NFL season. Week one is when it starts. So the deadline to sign up is August 29th. The buy-in is $500 and you can have a max 10 entries per person. So that's important to note, right? You could have up to 10 entries for this contest. It is $500 per entry compared to normal Vegas contests. Circa Millions is $1,000. I believe Super Contest NFL has upped it back to $1,500, but usually it's $1,000. It's $500. 7 picks a week against the spread. No totals, 7 picks a week against the spread. And here is the thing that I think should get you guys excited. On Wednesday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, that is when the games will get released. You will have the ability in this contest to pick every game on the board at that time. So there will be no FBS versus FCS games, but every game on the board, MAC, Mountain West, Sun Belt, all available, all fair game for the Super Contest College. Lines get locked in Wednesday, 5 p.m. Picks are due by Friday, 5 p.m. via app or over the counter. This will go on for 14 weeks, and the top 10 all get paid. So the more entries, the more money. Matt Eumanns last night set the over-under on 3,000 entries, which would be $1.5 million in the pool, and then split out over the top 10. If you don't live in town, you have to sign up in Vegas, but then you can get a proxy. There's plenty of great proxies. I'm not going to single out any particular proxy. There's great proxies all across the city. They're sitting at sportsbooks, at the Superbook, at Circa. So if you're coming to town over the next month and a half, you got to sign up for this contest. I will absolutely be in this contest. So thanks to John Murray over at the Westgate for giving me all the details on that. But I'm excited. I will certainly be in this contest. I will have a number of entries in this contest as well. Real quickly, before we hit a break and welcome in Colby, Mountain West Media Days are coming to town next week. And looking forward to talking to a bunch of the coaches. We're actually going to talk some Mountain West with Colby as well. I did a segment on Monday's primetime talking about the free bets that I put in to the app when I went on vacation last week to Pennsylvania. And one of them was a bet I was going to make regardless, but I wanted to get a three and haven't gotten a three yet. So I still am waiting for that three. But week zero, I truly believe Hawaii is going to beat Stanford. This is a team in a vital season under Coach Chang, friend of VEASAN. Love Coach Chang and what they're doing there at Hawaii. It feels like finally they've got the components in part to really run the offense the way that he wants to run it, the June Jones spread it out style. They've got their leading receiver in Ashlock returning at this year, so the top two leading receivers. And the reason I'm so excited about this Hawaii team this year, at least in week one against or week zero against Stanford, is the quarterback Micah Elejado. He was phenomenal in their season finale against New Mexico. I think he's got a potential to be a really special player out there for Hawaii. I have some questions about the depth amongst the offensive line. Hopefully no injuries. They did get hit a little bit in the portal. This is not a program that brings in a bunch via the portal. Brings back a lot on defense. And then who they're playing week zero. Look, this is a massive game for Hawaii. It's going to be on CBS, 7:30 Eastern. So a really big opportunity for Hawaii. And remember, a year ago in week one, they were in the primetime spot on CBS. And ultimately, they did not win. They should have won, but they covered against UCLA. I think the expectation is to win this game. So I'm hoping to get three, but I think they win. Plus 110 is out there at DraftKings. And that was a bet that I made via some free bets that I got when I went to the Keystone State last week. But I think Hawaii wins that week zero showdown against Stanford. And we'll be talking to Timmy Chang next week. So looking forward to that. He is scheduled to be on VEASAN Primetime next week. Check that. He's going to be on, I believe, 10:30 Eastern on Wednesday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. So we'll let you know all the specifics on that when Timmy Chang is scheduled to jump on VEASAN. But I do think his Rainbow Warriors get the win in week zero there. All right, busy podcast. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, tomorrow being Wednesday the 9th, Phil Steele, he is going to jump on the podcast. We're going to go a deep dive on the Big Ten. You guys voted, 700 of you chimed in on Twitter, and you want to hear a deep dive on the Big Ten. So we'll do that with Phil Steele on tomorrow. So looking forward to that. But up next, Colby Damp, then a deep dive on the Irish with Pete Sampson. This is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, excited to bring on my good friend, Colby Dant from a number of entities. We'll start first and foremost with the Sports Gambling Podcast, and then the umbrella goes down to the College Experience. They're breaking down, as they always do, all 136 college football teams this year. Colby also hosts the FCS show, and you can catch Ryan Kramer, Sean Green every Friday night on VSiN with SGP Live, as well as this gentleman joining them on a pretty regular basis from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern time on Fridays. Colby, appreciate you jumping on, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, man. And thanks for having me. And I've been listening to your episodes, man. Love your content, and excited to finally hop on, man. And this is the best time of year to a certain extent. It's a lot of pressure to release, 136 episodes, but this is where you go under the hood and check everything out. So love this time of year, man.
No doubt. And you've been doing an awesome job, and you've got a ton of win total bets that we're going to try to run through as many as possible here. Follow Colby on social media at the Colby D. And I do love the Picks Dundee moniker. It is well done. It flows well together. But let's jump right into some big boys, and we'll start in the SEC. Two teams that one made the playoff, one didn't, had an opportunity to in Alabama. I want to start with the Crimson Tide because, I was mentioning this to Matt Newman's on VSiN Primetime on Monday night, and I feel like there's a bunch of buy low candidates, at least from a quarterback position, whether it be Dylan Raiola, as we were on the Nebraska win total over a couple episodes ago, whether it be an Avery Johnson that felt like he had so much hype a year ago, and now maybe it's quieted a little bit. But Alabama overall, as crazy as this sounds, Colby, and I'm curious your perspective on it, I do think there's a little bit of a buy low thought process on the Crimson Tide. And, it's what have you done for me lately? Oh, Colby, I almost called him Colby. Kalen DeBoer, he can't do it, right? Yeah, this is a guy that, is just not ready. You see, the Boston College transfer down to Florida State, Castellanos calling him out and saying Nick Saban's not there anymore, Colby. And I'm thinking, this dude did just take Washington to the national championship like 2 years ago. So win total sits at 9.5. Juice varies. We'll call it -110 at circa. What do you make of the Crimson Tide this year? Is this a buy low candidate, as crazy as it sounds, regarding Alabama?
Yeah, no, I think it is. And I, I'm fascinated by, the Alabama fan that wants DeBoer gone after just a 9-3 and debatable playoff spot. They almost got in, and I don't think they should have got in, but they almost got in. And I look, he didn't have Ryan Grubb. It was year one. And another thing is, like, just the styles of coaching from Saban to DeBoer. I had an opportunity to interview DeBoer a long time ago, and like they're a lot different. So I just think that also plays a role in it. But also, I think Jalen Milroe probably didn't really fit his system. You look at DeBoer's previous quarterbacks, Michael Penix at Indiana, and then he transferred into Washington, and then he had Jake Hayner at Fresno. So they're more kind of drop back quarterbacks. So I think that was even a little bit of a challenge for DeBoer as well. And obviously he didn't have Ryan Grubb, the OC. He went for a couple days, I feel like, to Tuscaloosa, yeah, then jumped to the Seattle Seahawks as the offensive coordinator. He's done in Seattle there. But this is a guy that was with DeBoer at all those stops. You can trace him all the way back to Sioux Falls in Eastern Michigan when he was on those staffs. So I think that is a huge, huge get for Alabama in the offseason. And then you look at everything, whether it's Ty Simpson, whether it's Austin Mack, I still don't know. Like, I know everyone's saying Simpson. I kind of thought coming into the year it was going to be Mack, but we'll see what they do there. But Jan Miller back at the running back spot, the receivers, you could make an argument that they might have the best receiving core in the nation with Ryan Williams and Jeremy Bernard, and they add Isaiah Horton from Miami. The O-line was an issue at times, I thought, last season, but I think they were young and they're going to be a little bit better. Proctor's back after flirting with Iowa. And another thing is another year in Kane Womack's defense. And I think that will be big as well. Just the fact you're starting to know the schemes and everything, and just more comfortable with all the overhaul from the year ago. Another thing is I like the schedule. I think your road trips at Florida State, I'm not very high on them. Okay, at Georgia, sure. That one's Georgia.
That's tough.
Missouri, I'm not very high on. South Carolina, I'm not very high on. And then Auburn, obviously it's the Iron Bowl. Historically, they have troubles at Jordan-Hare. But at the same time, We don't even know if Hugh Freeze will be coaching that game. So I just think it's a great schedule. I love the over. I like them to, I actually like their odds to win the national championship. I about 2 weeks ago, we were doing our episode. I wonder if that's changed since then, but I think it's well worth a sprinkle on them to win the national championship as well.
Yeah. I had a buddy of mine text me a couple weeks ago and said, "Hey, I have a free bet. Who should I take to win the national title?" And I said, "I think you go Alabama or Clemson at the price." I think they were both in that 15 to 16 to one range. And I think you're absolutely, you know, spot on. Alabama, one of eight teams currently at DraftKings that's odds on to make the playoff, and a team that I am high on. I have yet to bet their win total over, but I think ultimately I will get there. If you're looking for the best price, circa at minus 110. I want to stick with Georgia here, a team that, it's funny because, look, you know, there's a running joke on social media. Every time I mention Notre Dame, it's a drinking game here on this podcast. But, you know, it's funny to think about how people were talking about Gunnar Stockton between the SEC championship and the Notre Dame game. It was like, ah, forget Carson Beck. This is the guy. And he didn't play all that well against Notre Dame, a pretty darn good defense. And his skill position players weren't really up to snuff. Let's be real about Georgia. Now it's a full off season, and I think a point that was made, I forget by who, but I thought it was an astute one, was, you know, Georgia could have went out, Colby, and got someone, but they stuck with Gunnar Stockton. So clearly there is belief that he's going to take the next step in that direction. So win total sits at 9.5 as well for Georgia. It's very juiced to the over at a minus 170 is the cheapest price you could find at DraftKings, but are you buying in on the dogs this year? I wouldn't say a bounce back season. They did lose three games a year ago, but they still won the SEC. I think people, that's a crazy thing, Colby, is people forget they are the SEC champ. You know, they won that conference a year ago. They earned a bye. They were the two seed, and they just got knocked out in the quarterfinals. But this is a team that, for their sake, was a down year, and they won 11-3 and won the conference.
Yeah, and they also dominated Texas in Austin, yeah, and got the best of them in Atlanta in a rematch where it's hard to beat a team twice. So credit to them. And that was in the, you know, they had the quarterback problems in that particular game. I do think it speaks volumes that they didn't go out and get somebody in a similar vein with USC, not moving on from Mavia. You know, they've clearly are content. And I think Kirby Smart does better with more. Remember, once upon a time, they brought in a five-star named JT Daniels from USC. And for whatever reason, even though they weren't really losing games with Daniels, Stetson Bennett was playing better. This kid, Stetson Bennett. And that was, you know, I almost feel like he's better with the unknown quarterback than he is the hot shot. So Gunnar Stockton, I'm not going to panic at that. And then the skill position players bringing in Zachariah Brandt from USC and Noah Thomas from A&M. The big thing is just all the starters back on defense as well. And obviously you heard Kirby Smart. I remember specifically in Austin at Darrell K. Royal Stadium. I can't remember if it was pregame or midgame or whatever, but I think it was postgame where he talked about how, he basically fired some shots at Greg Sankey and the SEC schedule makers for the schedule that he got. Well, that paid off like a politician talking right there, because they only have three true road games this year, and it's at Tennessee, and they're playing Tennessee in the first month, which, first off, they own Tennessee. The veer and shoot doesn't really work against them, but also I love them getting Tennessee early. Tennessee lost a lot from a year ago at Auburn, at Mississippi State. Those are your three games. I mean, yes, they play technically at Georgia Tech, but that's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I think Georgia Tech is foolish for doing that, because it ruins their home edge. And I think that's going to be a Georgia crowd. And then the other one is the cocktail party in Jacksonville. And I'm not buying into all the Florida hype yet. I mean, and Smart's owned Florida. So I think the schedule is the best schedule within the SEC. They host Alabama. They host Texas. Obviously those two teams are brutal opponents to play, but having to go between the hedges, all the difference in the world. I like Kirby Smart and those matchups. I think I got him favored in every game on the schedule.
Yeah, and it wasn't too long ago when you thought about a Georgia schedule. I'm just trying to remember what season it was. I think it was 2023 where they were a double-digit favorite in every game up until the month of November, and they ran the table, went undefeated that year, and then lost to Alabama in the SEC championship game. So, you know, a team that has been getting a lot of hype, this offseason is South Carolina. And I thought, you know, Bruce Feldman had a really cool article on Lenora Sellers. I always love to see stories about, you know, guys like that that were not big time recruits. And ultimately, everything you hear about Lenora Sellers is positive. And I think he's a very good quarterback and has a chance to be a first round pick, maybe even a top 10 pick. But there's a lot of hype and expectations around this South Carolina team. Win total sits at 7.5. It's minus 135 to the under at DraftKings and BetMGM. And once again, I'm not saying that Circa is this perfect book and they don't ever, you know, lose bets. But I do think sometimes, Colby, it's an indicator when you see a couple of books out there at 7.5 juiced under, and then you look at a Circa and it's a 7 flat. So, you know, you look at a hook, talking to, you know, Brad Powers, pro handicapper, he rates a half a win at about 70 cents. So it's a pretty big difference out there in the market. And you would agree with that, because I think you are not buying in on the Gamecocks to have back-to-back 9-win seasons.
Yeah, you know, I think credit last season's run was an incredible run down the stretch. I mean, they really should have beat Alabama. I felt like they let that game get away from them. But
should have beat LSU too. They got screwed by the refs.
They did. They really did. I'm still mad at that call. You know, this was also a team though that just got depleted in the NFL draft. I mean, their defense was great last season. They got 6 guys that are currently on NFL rosters. 5 of them were drafted. Another one, you know, is trying to make a roster in the NFL. So like that to me is pretty substantial. And then you look on the offensive side of the ball, Lenora Sellers, obviously does look like an athletic freak, but, and he did turn down a bunch of money, but that means they probably ponied up. So can you avoid that second year slump there? But another thing is Dow Loggins, their offense coordinator, took the App State head coaching job. I think that matters. You're learning a new offense with a defense that's just not going to be nearly as good as a year ago. Then you look at the schedule, and to me, I personally think they're going to lose every road game, true road game, like at Missouri. For whatever reason, Missouri's had their numbers over the years, whether it's Beamer or whoever. I feel like Missouri just plays them incredibly well. At LSU, I don't have them as a favorite. At Ole Miss, I don't. And then at A&M. So that right there puts you at 4 losses. And then you basically got to run the table at home, or, you know, then neutral. They have the kickoff on Sunday, Labor Day weekend against Virginia Tech. I do like them in that game because Virginia Tech, I think, is kind of a mess. But home game against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt got Pavia in their 7th year, and I do think they're going to be better this year than even last season as far as like the actual team, maybe not the record. Home games against Kentucky, who knows what they're going to be. Probably not very good, but Oklahoma, Alabama, and Clemson. Alabama and Clemson, I fully have them as favorites. Oklahoma's kind of a wild card with the Mateer thing, but I just don't see it this year, man. When I look at the roster, they got some athletes at certain spots that make you, you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball, that say, okay, maybe. But I think the defense took such a major hit. I just don't think it's there. And the schedule, I think, is harder this year. So I'm all over the under here, man. This is one of my bigger bets on the entire season.
Yeah, that stretch in the middle part of the year is pretty challenging when you're at LSU, Oklahoma, Alabama, at Ole Miss. Now, they do get Oklahoma and Bama in kind of advantageous spots. Oklahoma will be coming off of the Red River rivalry game against Texas. Alabama will be coming off the third Saturday in October against Tennessee, but still a pretty brutal stretch there, no doubt. For South Carolina, I want to go to a team that's been getting a lot of hype, and, you know, they're in the headlines because of their ability to go into these recruiting wars now and win them. And they got this 5-star left tackle, and that's Texas Tech. Obviously, he's not going to be on the roster this year, but we got the Big 12 media days going on right now. We will not get a Big 12 media poll after a year ago where Arizona State was picked 16th and ended up winning the conference. So I think Brett Yormark made some comments today at media day, said, yeah, you know, it wasn't a good look for the conference in that regard. I think that's kind of short-sighted and silly, but that's another point. You look at Texas Tech this year and Joey McGuire heading into year number 4, a lot of hype, a lot of belief that this team could potentially win the Big 12 this year, which wouldn't be crazy. You look at their win total, it's sitting at 8.5. And if you look across the betting market, DraftKings is minus 105 to the under, Circa's plus 115 to the under, BetMGM is plus 125 to the under. on this Texas Tech Red Raider team. And you're not pointing those guns up. You're kind of pointing them down here, Colby.
Yeah, they got to prove it to me here, man. I mean, I watched them get destroyed in Pullman last year to a Washington State team that didn't end up being amazing. And then, I mean, even the opener against Abilene Christian, they needed to, you know, Abilene went for two in the win in overtime. The Cincy game, I mean, I can go on and on. Like last season, you know, they just, and really that's been the case under Joey McGuire. They're sure, he's a great, you know, high school coach and a very likable guy, I believe. But he just has to prove it to me. I know they got the Cody Campbell NIL money and they're just buying everybody. What are they? The number one transfer portal class in the country, but you still have to make that work. I know you could dive in and say, well, technically they have 21 starters back. I know Phil Steele was talking about that recently, but you know, Baron Morton's had injury problems, their quarterback, the road trips. Let's talk about that. I mean, they got to go to Utah. They got to go to Arizona State. They got to go to Kansas State. Even Houston is a team. I think Willie Fritz gets the maximum out of his teams. I think, you know, Houston could be a little more trickier than some people think. And then even the West Virginia spot. I know people aren't high on West Virginia, but one thing I know about Rich Rodriguez over the years, his offense is all about rhythm and timing. So to me, you want to play Rich Rodriguez's speed option early in the year in year one, because they're not going to have that. They're getting them the final game of the season on November 29th. And not only do you have an air raid team essentially going cross country to a place that, you know, there's a decent shot there'll be some weather, but then Rich Rod's timing, I think, will be figured out by then. So I think on all their road spots, maybe the Houston game, I would favor them, but I think all the other ones are very, very tricky road spots. The home schedule is nice though. So I can see the optimism there, especially with the Retzlaff news, because I thought BYU could have given them a game. Oklahoma State is a true mystery team with Mike Gundy and like 50 transfers, I feel like. UCF, Kansas, you know, I just think though, I look at Kansas and I say, that's a hard game. I don't just have Texas Tech winning that thing against Kansas, knowing that Leipold's back. Daniels is much healthier. You saw in the second half of the season there in Lawrence, how much better he played than the first half. As they were kind of the team to ruin the whole Big 12. That's what Yormark should have opened up with. It wasn't preseason rankings. It was the Kansas Jayhawks getting healthy and destroying all the team's chances. To me, they just got to prove it to me. I just don't know that he's that cutting edge of a coach. It's the games where you're not like, yeah, they've gotten up. And I remember they beat Iowa State, I think it was last year, and they got up in that big spot at that point. They beat Arizona State. But it's the games like Abilene Christian to me, you know, or just where they don't look very good. Colorado came in there and really put it on them a year ago. And Texas Tech, I think, got up like 10 or 14 nothing in the first 5 minutes of the game. So they got to prove it to me. I love the under here.
Yeah. And interesting when you look at the schedule, they play Arizona State on the road, as you mentioned. It's kind of sandwiched in there. Arizona State will be coming off a bye, so really good spot there. Yeah, I don't know what to expect from BYU this year. We talked about it to open up the last podcast, Colby, which is, look, Retzlaff leaving. I know Kalani Sitake, when he was asked about it at Media Days, didn't really give much information on the whole matter. But yeah, BYU kind of seems like that really big curveball, and that's what the whole Big 12 kind of is in a conference this year. And, you know, to your point about Houston, we had Chris Felica on, I think it was last week, and he said, hey, why not take a shot on Houston to win this conference with Willie Fritz in year number three, in year number two, excuse me, with that program. So, yeah, I think Big 12, once again, is going to be wildly unpredictable. As everyone knows on this podcast, I'm in the bag for Devin Dampier. That's my guy. I'm excited for him to go to Utah to bring his offensive coordinator as well. But the Big 12 is just so much fun to watch each and every year, and so much fun to bet as well. Let's get to the Big 10, another maybe buy-low candidate, and that's USC. So USC is a team that, look, last year ended on a high note, winning their bowl game in impressive fashion against Texas A&M. And you already hit on it, Colby, which is, I was surprised to see that Lincoln Riley is going to kind of hitch his wagon to Jaden Maiava in a, I don't want to call it a make or break year, because I know the buyout is enormous there for Lincoln Riley, but this is a huge season for USC, and they're going to roll with Maiava, who took over, you know, late in the season for Miller Moss, who moves on to Louisville. You know, win total sits at 7.5 at DraftKings. By far, the best price is 7.5, -135 to the over. MGM's out to -175. Even Circa's moved it up to 8. So there's a lot of belief that this USC team is a buy low type of team, winning just 6 regular season games a year ago. Are you fighting on with the Trojans this year?
I am, and I think there's great value on them to win the Big Ten, really. Like, because I see the path. I think they have a good, nowadays I feel like with the conferences being so large, you're looking for the path to get to the championship game. And this is one that I've highlighted that I think is a pretty good path. Yes, and I like Malavia. I think this team was actually better than they were last year. Like the record represents. I thought, you know, they were better than Penn State, and Penn State found a way to win that game. I still think, like, if you watch that game, USC was the better team on the field. And the Michigan game, they let them off the hook. So I do think they were better than their record. But Mavia is back. They let Miller Moss go to Louisville. So I trust Lincoln Riley with quarterbacks. They add Eli Sanders, running back that I think will be solid in their system. Got a lot of the offensive line starters back. The receiving room, I mean, it's one of the best in the country. You can tell by letting Zachariah Branch go to Georgia. They're just like, yeah, okay, we don't really need you. We have Jacoby Lane and Strahan and Lemon and everybody. So the offense will be fine. The defense, year two. I thought year one, D'Anton Lynn did a really good job personally. And I think it's going to get even better this year. They add Rob Ryan to that staff. He's got some hilarious videos out there on the internet already. But the schedule is really what I love. To me, the home spots, LA Coliseum, Michigan State's got to go there, Michigan, Northwestern, Iowa, UCLA, and then the non-con, you got Clay Helton returning to the scene of the crime, and then Missouri State, a new FBS school. I got them favored in every single home game. So then you look at the road schedule. Okay, at Purdue, at Illinois, at Notre Dame, at Nebraska, at Oregon. Okay, yeah, I mean, Notre Dame game, throw that one out. That's irrelevant, I mean, for them to get to the Big Ten championship. It matters obviously for the playoff seeding, but I do think in the other games at Purdue, at Illinois, I like the fact those are earlier in the year. At Nebraska, I'm like you, Tim. I'm kind of high on Nebraska this year. Oregon's kind of a mystery team. Evan Stewart news out for the season, but to me, it's in conference. I can only really find 2 losses here. I mean, yes, if you build a perfect scenario, maybe Michigan goes in there, or maybe they trip up. But to me, I think they'll get either one of those games between Illinois and Nebraska. Sure, maybe they lose in Eugene, but that's a great conference schedule. I think it's one of the better conference schedules within this conference. So I love USC in this spot.
Yeah, and to point out the spot there for USC going to Champaign, September 20th, and I'm not saying this tongue-in-cheek, Indiana-Illinois is a enormous game. For both of those teams, both for Indiana trying to get back to the playoff, Illinois is becoming that popular team this offseason, Colby. So I'm not going to say it's a letdown spot hosting USC, a iconic brand like that. But how does that Indiana game go the week prior? Do they lose that game? Are they in a little bit of a licking their wound situation? So, yeah, I look, as much as it pains me to say it as someone who loves to see USC down, I do think they've got some dudes, and D'Anton Lynn, as you pointed out, I think is in an elite defensive coordinator year two. And look, you know, watching Mekhi Lemon up close and personal last year, Jacoby Lane as well, those dudes are the real deal. So if Maiava could cut down on the turnovers, which has kind of always been his bugaboo, that'll be a team I think certainly to keep an eye on there in the Big Ten. Heading over to the ACC, you know, Miami opens up the season in a monster game against Notre Dame, a team that a year ago, like Alabama, like Ole Miss, both, you know, let's call it what it was, peed down their leg in a big opportunity, whether it was, you know, Alabama losing as a 2-touchdown favorite to Oklahoma, losing as a 3-touchdown favorite to Vanderbilt. You win one of those games, you're in the playoff. Ole Miss losing to a Kentucky team that didn't win another SEC game. And Miami, all they had to do, Colby, was go up to the Carrier Dome or whatever the hell they're calling it nowadays, the JMA Wireless Dome, and beat Syracuse. And they couldn't do it. And Mario Cristobal kicked a field goal with, you know, however many minutes to go, down 7 to cut it to a 4-point game, took the ball out of his stud quarterback's hands, and they don't make the college football playoffs. So There's a lot of expectations on this Miami team here in year four for Mario Cristobal. They bring in Carson Beck, who I think is maybe a little bit of a buy low candidate this year, but who knows how he's going to respond to Tommy John surgery. They're always going to be busy in the portal. They were busy in the portal again. Win total sits at 9.5, juiced under at -$1.60 at DraftKings, -155 at BetMGM. It's 9 -110 both ways at Circa. What do you expect from the Canes this year?
Yeah, I this is one of my favorite ones. I love the under here. And by the way, even in the preseason a season ago, I was all over them losing that game to Syracuse. It kind of went exactly the way I figured.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to go right there. I've been fading Mario Cristobal for a long time. I think he's one of the, I think this isn't even a hot take anymore. I feel like everyone knows this, but when he was at Oregon, I was calling this out. I can remember that Stanford game. I think he's one of the worst in-game coaches there is in all of college football. And that includes the group of five. Like, I think he really sets your team back with in-game management. And another thing is, okay, Carson Beck comes in and maybe there is some value on him to put up great stats. He's a talented quarterback. And Shannon Dawson's offense, I think will probably be solid again. But the defense, pass defense was terrible last year. I do like the hire of Heatherman. He did a great job at James Madison a few years back. And then I thought he did a solid job at Minnesota. But part of why I love fading, and I feel like it's a trendy pick almost every year, is I love the under on the Canes in a lot of years. They don't have much of a home field advantage. I remember a Louisville game, I think it was 2 years ago, you know, where Louisville had that crowd. So it's like a 45-minute, you know, trip, you know, from the campus, from what I understand. I haven't done it personally, but they show up for the Florida State game and maybe the Notre Dame game this year to open things up, or the, you know, the in-state battles, but it's not much of a home edge. And when I look at this schedule with so many unknowns, like as far as like, I think the offense will still be solid, but it's not going to be as good as a year ago. The receiver spot is a big question mark on this team. It's not what it was a year ago. And to me, a little bit of regression offensively, even if the defense gets better, I think there's too many tough games on the schedule. I personally like Notre Dame in the opener. I know that news with the ATV accident makes it a little bit more tricky. But I still like the Irish there, despite, you know, starting a freshman quarterback on the road. I think that crowd will actually, I'm curious, what do you think that crowd will be? I was thinking it'll be 50-50, right?
Yeah. So Colby, going back to 2017, you mentioned no home field advantage. 2017, I wasn't there, but from everything that I have heard, and if you watch the game, it was an absolute hornet's nest. They brought back everyone, Ed Reed, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it was popping. It was like old Orange Bowl vibes down there. I don't anticipate it to be that raucous. I'll be there, so I will I'll try to temper the excitement there for the Miami fans. But yeah, I think it'll be a good crowd. I don't know if it'll be 50-50, but I think there will certainly be a bunch of Notre Dame fans for sure inside that stadium. But it should be a good crowd. I think it will definitely be a good crowd for Miami. I'll say pro Miami, but not like it was in November of 2017.
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame's momentum right now is just through the roof. So, like, I mean, I favor Notre Dame in that game. But even if Miami pulled that off, because it is a tall order to ask a freshman quarterback to win on the road against a ranked team, but they still have Florida they have to play in a couple games, and I'm curious what that crowd will be. They have to go to Tallahassee. Look, I'm not very bullish on Florida State this year, but that's a rivalry game. Throw the record books out, and I do believe Cristobal, anytime you hit the road, it's a tricky spot. Louisville comes there. I personally think Louisville is like the coaching difference in those games. I thought Louisville got hosed last year on a bad call. And I expect Louisville to give them all they could handle in that game. So that is a very tricky game. Then they have to go to Dallas to take on SMU at Gerald Ford Stadium there. And then my favorite part, I'm all over these two games. Miami traditionally in the cold struggles. They got to end their season in Blacksburg. Who knows if Brent Pry's there or not. And then at Pitt, a team that I am kind of high on this year, I think they will definitely lose one of those two games. And then there's the Cristobal effect, hosting NC State, Syracuse. I think they're wins on paper, but I can't. Every year he's good for one blunder, So sure, maybe they could lose there. But I think in all those games, that's a tough schedule. I think it's a much harder schedule, especially with the way those road trips align in very cold places, the final two games of the season. So I love the under here. And I think it'll be a conversation this next offseason. I know there's a ton of momentum. I know they're John Ruiz and all that money is bringing in top talent, but I think it'll be a conversation if is Cristobal on the hot seat going into next year.
All right, you mentioned Pitt, so let's get to the Pitt Panthers. Year 11, man, for Pat Narduzzi. The Nard Dog is pretty much good for a solid 8-win season pretty much every year, even though I know in 21 they had the magical run to the BCS or whatever, the New Year's Six, excuse me, a number of years back. But they do bring back a lot this year, do the Pitt Panthers. And as you mentioned, you know, maybe a good spot there on November 29th against Miami. Win total sits at 6.5, plus money to the over, plus 140 to the over at Circa, plus 135 to the over at DraftKings. Are you buying some Pitt Panther action this year?
Yeah, and you mentioned that magical year with Kenny Pickett and the fake slide and everything. They had Mark Whipple that year, and they had an amazing offense. Mark Whipple did a great job, and it was hilarious because after the season, you know, I don't want to say he was fired, but they went their separate ways. It was almost like Narduzzi was like, no, that offense was too good.
The Nardog was what famously went out and was like, yeah, I want to run the ball more. It's like, dude, you just won the conference and you went to the New Year's. Like, that's what I can't stand this dude. Like, all he does is complain about everything. He's always grumpy. They won 11 games and he was complaining. But look, you know, he's got a pretty good quarterback. They don't have Clemson on the schedule. They get Louisville at home. They get Notre Dame, I think, in a really curious spot for the Irish. They'll be coming off a night game against Navy, and there'll be a bye week there for Pittsburgh. So, look, I get you on your enthusiasm. I just – the Nard Dog drives me crazy.
No, look, in similar vein to Cristobal, I remember him kicking a field goal with, like, 3 minutes left, down 7 at Penn State. At the 1 yard line.
Oh, and they missed. They hit the upright.
But then he defended it.
And then he defended it.
One of the more mind numbing moments in college football history of late. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. But I will say this, and I apologize in advance because I can't remember who did the metric on what the guy does with 3 stars, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. I believe someone did a composite. And I have drawn a blank on who it was, where they talked about all, you know, the recruiting and who gets the maximum and who develops players better than anybody in the country at the 3-star level. And it was by far Pat Narduzzi. It was not even close. I believe the guy can coach defense. And when you tell me there's 8 starters back on defense, and one of the things I host an FCS, the FCS show for us, the FCS College Football Experience, and you know, Western Carolina is coached by Kerwin Bell, the old Florida quarterback in the 80s, and his son Cade Bell was the OC. So I was all over in our college fantasy football league, Desmond Reed coming into the ACC last year, who got newcomer of the year. That hire, I think you get another year in that offense for Eli Holstein. He also brings in Cole Gonzalez, the former Western Carolina quarterback, who I actually think, I know Holstein was at Bama and highly recruited, but Gonzalez, I like that depth now. If Holstein, you know, struggles a little bit, Gonzalez has been in this offense for years. And they also brought in their wideout, Raphael Williams from Western Carolina. I just really like that offense in a second year with that, some of that talent there. And I think that with a Narduzzi defense, with 8 starters back, with the way he develops, I think is really good. And then there's the schedule. I love the fact he gets Rich Rod in the first month of the year. I told you that that offense is based off timing. And to me, it's hard to capture that timing in practice reps. So getting the backyard brawl, I know it's in Morgantown and that's always tricky, but I like the fact that they not only that, you get Central Michigan, I think 2 games before or a game before where they're breaking in a brand new head coach as well. And then the home schedule. Louisville has had, for whatever reason, whether it's Brown, whether it's Petrino, anytime they play at Pitt, they can't win these games. I don't know why. So I touched on Miami coming there November 29th. I think that's a loss when I factor that in. NC State, BC, Duquesne. I mean, the Irish, okay. Notre Dame, I do believe, will be their toughest opponent at home. I don't think that's a shocking statement. But then the road schedule. at Florida State, at Syracuse, at Stanford, at Georgia Tech. Okay, I am kind of bullish on Georgia Tech, providing Haynes King stays healthy. But the other three teams, not very high on. So, and they can afford to lose. This is the ACC. So, like, you know, you're a couple of years ago, I took Louisville to get to the ACC championship just because of the path. Yeah, yep. And I think this is a similar spot. And it reminds me, in a way, now I'm not saying Eli Holstein's Kenny Pickett, but I think that offense is going to put up a lot more points than people think. And then you factor in, and I don't know what happened last year. They were 7-0, and then just the wheels fell off. I think getting a lot more of these Western Carolina guys on that roster, I know it's, you say, Colby, that's an FCS guys. FCS guys, Cam Ward's first pick of the draft. Cam Scadaboo took over the college football playoffs. Some of these guys can play, man. So I love the over here.
I want to wrap with some G5 bets, and you've got a bunch. We're not going to go through all of them, but I want to start. You and I will be at Mountain West Media Days next week. We're going to have a bunch of coaches and players on VSiN, so stick around for that. I'll have a couple of those interviews on this feed. But look, Coach Ken is a guy that I will go to the mat for Coach Ken, not that he needs me to do so. He's an elite coach. What he did, the sustained success he had at Navy, I think it's overlooked a little bit because of the ending there in Annapolis. But he is an amazing coach, and we had no idea what to expect from San Jose State a year ago, Colby, and they went out and won 7 regular season games. And now there's a little more continuity coming back this year with the San Jose State Spartans. And how about the schedule? No Boise State, no UNLV, no Colorado State. They get Hawaii at home, and I love him. He's my guy, but Timmy Chang has struggled off of the island. They get Air Force at home. They were able to beat Air Force a year ago, and that's certainly a program that Coach Ken knows plenty about. The schedule makes up pretty beautifully here for San Jose State. This is a team that I wouldn't say is under the radar, though. They're getting some love out there in, you know, in our nerdy circles. Even money to over 7.5 at Circa, minus 115 at BetMGM. Are you backing Coach Ken here in the San Jose State Spartans?
Yeah, this is like my special of the year. I know it seems to be getting kind of trendy, like you said, but I consider it like my Texas State play last year. Now you'll say, hey, Texas State, they didn't make the playoffs, but I saw the path, right? And I was like, let me just take a shot on them. But I love the over. I love the conference, because remember, the Mountain West, if you are the top seed, you're going to host the game. And I think that's a key element, is getting it off of the Smurf turf. They don't play Boise. They don't play UNLV with Dan Mullen coming in. They don't play Colorado State. Those were the three other teams competing with them at the top of the Mountain West a season ago. So you avoid the top three teams from a season ago. But you look back at last year's team, you know, 2-point loss to Washington State, 7-point loss to Colorado State. The Boise game will tell you 42-21. Anyone that knows that game.
Well, go watch Van Pelt. Van Pelt had an iconic breakdown of that game on Bad Beats, because I think he gave out San Jose State on winners. That was an all-time Bad Beat.
Yeah, it's almost remarkable. Like, I watched it a couple months ago just to rewatch, and I was just like, we've watched a lot of football in our lives. I just don't know how that happens, but they outplayed Boise a lot of that game. And I think Boise knows that. Well, to me, I loved last year. I was, you know, kind of like the jury's out on this team. I loved the hire. I just didn't know how fast everything would work. Derek Odoms, the DC, has been there 9 years. Love that Nia Montalolo returned him. But to me, I'm a huge fan of Craig Stutzman, their offensive coordinator, running that spread and shred offense. He was at Texas State their best year. He was with my friend Nick Rolovich's offense there at Hawaii when Hawaii was really going, that got Rolovich that Washington State job. So I think he's a cutting edge offensive coordinator. I think he'll be a head coach at some point. But how about this? Not only do they avoid the top three teams in the Mountain West from a season ago, they play six first year head coaches out of their 12 games. I love the road spots. You look at it. Okay. At Texas week two, even that game could be hilarious they're going to lose that game, but still
after Texas, Ohio State.
Yeah. If Texas was to beat Ohio State, they could be a little flat, and that would be a dangerous game. At Stanford, they beat Stanford a year ago. Stanford seems to be a complete mess. You know, they basically had like a mutiny after Troy Taylor left. I feel like half the team left. At Wyoming, at always tricky, in my opinion, doesn't matter the coach or the roster. But I love the fact that it's at Wyoming and at Utah State early in the year before it gets cold, especially when you're running the run and shoot stuff, the June Jones stuff. Late in the year at Nevada, that's a little tricky, but at San Diego State, there's no real crowd there. It's a great schedule. And when you look at, to me, another year in Stutzman's offense, they found their quarterback midway through the season. That's another thing. Walker Egitt, you know, they were able to find him midseason. He was not, they started Emmett Brown, who's now at Coastal Carolina. I think that with, I like both their backs, Floyd Chalk back as well at the running back spot. Four of, well, it's a tricky how you look at it, but three starters from a year ago back on the offensive line, but I consider it four because they had a guy that was planned to start in the preseason in August out for the season. He started the year prior under Brent Brennan. He is back. So in a way, they got four of five back on the O-line. I love their odds. I think you take a long shot on them to make the college football playoff because if they're hosting Boise State, you saw it last year. They played Boise incredibly well. Nia Montolola will have these guys ready. And I think it's worth it with the odds. I'm pulling it up currently. I believe they're like, what are they? I think plus 2,500 right now to make the college football playoffs. So why not throw that in there as well? But I like their Mountain West odds and I love the win total over as well.
All right, we'll wrap on this, Colby. As mentioned, you're a dude who is going to break down all 136 teams. You've got a plethora of G5 win totals. I really wanted to hit on San Jose with you. Give us, outside of San Jose, maybe your favorite G5 win total you've currently got in your account.
Oh, it is in the Sun Belt Conference. I'm actually I want to like talk to the Vegas people setting the numbers here because I'm just baffled at Southern Miss at 4.5 wins. It probably went up since I did the episode a week ago. I haven't checked. But
what was your juice?
Oh man, it wasn't that bad. I think it
went up a little bit, but I'm curious because I haven't put this one into the account yet. I've been staring at it and I think I'm going to get there. I want to point this out real quickly before you dive into it. So Southern Miss 4.5 wins. DraftKings is -160 to the over. BetMGM -165. So it's pricey, but how about this? Circa just dropped their G5 win totals. I want to say on Monday, the 7th, Colby. And they posted Southern Miss at 5.5, a full win total difference from other spots. So it is, it's certainly on the move, and it feels like that those 4.5s are going to be gone pretty soon.
Yeah, and look, but the conference odds are still nice. And to me, you look who won the Sun Belt a year ago. It was Marshall. Charles Huff and Marshall. If you follow this team, if you dig into what they've brought in, it's pretty remarkable. They're basically brought in. It's almost like it's. I would compare it to if college basketball fans remember Ben McCollum there at Drake, who yep. brought his entire team over. Short of one corner, I think, and one linebacker that started for him, he's basically brought Marshall's team that won the Sun Belt into Southern Miss. And if you look at what Southern Miss always has great fans. They've been terrible lately. They haven't been able to figure it out. So I think he'll ignite that fan base. But when you look at the schedule, I think they have a great path. I love the fact they open up with Mississippi State. That place will be rocking. I believe Southern Miss, AKA Marshall from last year, is better than Mississippi State. So like, I understand it's year two of Lebby's system, but I think that is a game, and I think it's a very winnable game. I've already taken them to win the money line on that game. Love the fact you get App State and Dow Loggins in the first month. Love the fact you get Charles Kelly and Jacksonville State in the first month. Then your road spots at Georgia Southern. Why does this matter to me? You get a bye week before it, but if you watch the Marshall Georgia Southern game a year ago, Marshall blew a 20-point fourth quarter lead in Statesboro. I think they have that game circled. I think they'll get that one. I'm not very high on Louisiana. That's another one. I love the under. They only have three returning starters on offense. And I'm not sold on Des Moreau, the head coach there. Then you look at the other spots. They're hosting Texas State. They're hosting Troy. They avoid a lot of, there's no James Madison on the schedule. They avoid to me a lot of the tricky spots within the conference. I love their odds to win the conference. I love them on the over. The number makes no sense to me. They've gone out. Not only did they get some guy like bringing in most of Marshall's team and their defensive coordinator, who's a stud. They went out and brought in multiple Ole Miss transfers, Mississippi State transfers. They brought in one of the best linebackers from the FCS from Portland State. I'm all over this. This is one of the best plays I think you can do. Southern Miss to win the Sun Belt. Southern Miss on the over. Load up.
All right, you've convinced me. I got to go make a drive and make sure we get this one, because Circa has it unfortunately at 5.5. So we'll have to figure out how to get that 4.5. Colby, this was awesome, man. I know multiple people on Twitter had asked me to get you on, and glad we were able to do this. This was great, and we'll definitely do it again here, man.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, and look forward to catching up next week at Mountain West Media Days.
At the Colby D is where you can find him on social media. College Experience Sports Gambling Podcast, SGP Live on VSiN. And we're going to go from Colby, take a quick break. On the other side, Notre Dame loses a potential first round pick on the offensive line. What does it mean? In-depth breakdown of the Irish with Pete Sampson of The Athletic. He'll join us next. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we continue the podcast. Excited to welcome on my friend. He's been on the podcast before. He is Notre Dame's beat reporter for The Athletic. He's also the co-host of The Independent podcast. He and Matt Fortuna talking all things Notre Dame, and I've been on that podcast a couple of times. So a little home and home here. And for Josh Shuler, great podcast. The Notre Dame mentioned Drinking Game is alive and well. We'll go ahead and drink again, sir, because we're going in depth on the Irish today with Pete Sampson. Mr. Sampson, I was just on with a fellow Notre Dame podcaster, Tyler, his podcast earlier today, because I had texted him and I said, there's too much positivity right now regarding the program. Something bad's going to happen. And lo and behold, Notre Dame loses maybe a first round pick in Charles Jagasaw to a broken arm. So, you know, there's been some details unearthed on this story that I think maybe shed some, I don't want to say positive light, but maybe makes it sound less stupid than it probably was initially thought to be, with it being a ATV injury where you break your arm. It sounds like there were, you know, people involved there, and it was not maybe that, you know, silly of a injury. Regardless, what have you heard about this injury, and how long do you expect Charles Jagasaw to be sidelined for the Irish?
I think optimistically we're talking about the end of October. And yeah, I mean, what I've heard on the injury, I think the difference between an ATV and a UTV is actually pretty significant.
Which I had no idea what a UTV was, I'll be honest.
Yeah, that's like, oh, that's a UTV. But yeah, that's because ATV conjured this idea of like just joyriding around the hill, you know, back hills of Wyoming. UTV is, you know, more of a, you know, work vehicle. So yeah, it's like the injury is the injury regardless of how it happened. And it's really unfortunate for Jagasaw, because you're right. At the high end, he was a first round pick, maybe after the season. At the low end, he's just a guy who's going to play in the NFL. So taking that out of your roster, particularly with the way the schedule starts, is tough. You know, nobody needs Charles Jagasaw back for Boston College. You needed him for Miami and Texas A&M, and you're not going to have him.
Now, they could have him for the playoff run if they were to get there again this year. And they got him last year. He was thrust into action. Remind me, Pete, in the Penn State game. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And he was great in the Penn State game.
I think he may have, like, he suited up for Georgia, but didn't see, like, meaningful work. But, yeah, Penn State game, I think it was second quarter. That's when Angeli came in roughly as well. They needed him, and he delivered in a big way. And then at guard, and then Ohio State, you move him out to left tackle because Anthony Knapp goes down. And, you know, I thought he played well there too. So he is a tremendous talent. You cannot just sugarcoat the fact that you removed an NFL prospect for your lineup, but they did the same thing last year when he tore his pec in August.
Yeah.
And the offensive line, while it wasn't great to begin the season, it got better and better and better. And they were able to get through that early test at Texas A&M.
And that's what I wanted to get to with you, because where is the state of this Notre Dame team from a depth standpoint? Because I think something, and I'm sure the collective eye roll will continue out there, but something that's kind of glossed over is that Notre Dame was really, I want to say ravaged, but they were hit hard with injuries last year on the offensive line. They lose Benjamin Morrison, who was thought to be maybe the most indispensable mm-hmm. piece of their defense. And the defense actually got better with Leonard Moore, which is just kind of crazy to think about. So I'm not going to say this is a positive, but comparing it to last year when I had you on this very podcast, because the first practice of spring camp or summer camp, excuse me, they lose Charles Chagasaw and they have to start a true freshman at left tackle against Nick Scorton and Texas A&M. And he held up, you know, but I guess two things. What's next for Notre Dame on the offensive line? This is an offensive line that was believed to be top five, maybe top three in the country. And then secondly, last year, Pete, they had an all-time elusive sack-avoiding quarterback in Riley Leonard. And this year, they have a redshirt freshman in CJ Carr, who is very talented, but is not as a fleet of foot as Riley Leonard.
No, and that's, I think that Leonard masked a lot with the offensive line last year, where he could just get out of stuff, you know, and maybe he held the ball to get into some stuff too. I don't want to like have that be purely a negative looking at the offensive line last year that you had a mobile quarterback. Cause I think that, you know, there were times where Leonard maybe didn't see the field as well as Carr could, even, you know, early days. So I would go with Sullivan Abshire at guard as a like-for-like replacement with Jagasaw and not move Anthony Knapp. I realize if you're kind of following Notre Dame closely on a message board level, you've tinkered with the lineup as if this is NCAA 2026. And I don't think that Joe Rudolph, the offensive line coach, is going to do that. I think that Sullivan Abshire, he's been here for a couple years. They liked him in spring, more of a center, but he's a bigger body, bigger than Anthony Knapp. And I think that's kind of the guard body type that they like, early, just over 300 pounds, you know, 320 maybe, and can move pretty well too. So that's, to me, that's where you start and you hope that that works out.
So let's just get to Notre Dame as a team, because I bet them to win the national championship, I want to say a month or two ago, because I just felt like the number was off. And it was 30-1 at a sports book here in town at the Westgate Superbook. And we talked about it on the podcast. Now, you know, Pete, they're around 15-1, a little bit less at some shops, a little bit more at others. They're a favorite to make the playoff. I guess when you look at this Notre Dame team, what's the ceiling? We'll start with that on this Notre Dame team. As you alluded to, they will be a favorite in every game they play, barring catastrophic injuries. But that doesn't mean you're going to go 12-0. So when you look at the schedule, Miami out of the chute, they're a 3.5, 3-point favorite. Bye week, Texas A&M, 7, 7.5-point favorite. They're a 12.5-point road favorite at Arkansas. They're around a 15.5-point favorite against Boise State. USC, anywhere from 10.5 to 12.5. When you look at this roster from a ceiling perspective, what is the ceiling of Notre Dame in 2025?
I think that they can, the ceiling is they can go all the way. This is a team that I think that they've invested and built and recruited and developed in a way that they have all the pieces. Is it a dominant group at the interior of the defensive line? No. You know, are the receivers killers on the outside? No. But I do think we're at the point with Notre Dame that we're kind of like nitpicking to find weaknesses in the roster. And that's with the quarterback who's never really done it. I just feel like the offensive skill positions, you know, the offensive line takes a hit without Jagasaw. But I mean, when's the last time you watched Notre Dame and thought like, well, they have the best player on the field every game. I don't even need to know who's on the other sideline, because that's what they have with Jeremiah Love. And that's been a long, long time. They've had really good secondaries over the last few years. They should have a really good secondary. I think their linebacker group has the potential to be great. So it's, to me, it's like, if you can split the first two games, get CJ Carr feeling good about himself, I don't see any reason why this team can't go on a run from there. And I think with the way the schedule sets up, even going 10-2 is probably going to put you in the playoff. But to me, this is like sealing 11-0 in regular season and then make some noise in the postseason, similar to what they did last year.
Yeah, I would not play the win total. Last year, I was convinced this team would not lose more than two games. And I kind of got creative. And look, when they lost to Northern Illinois, a lot of confidence went out the window.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, this team might lose six games. I remember telling my wife at some point in September after they lost in Northern Illinois, because the lone game I had mapped out to go to was USC, Pete. And I'm like, I didn't want to go anymore. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And then they run the table, and I was very happy that I ultimately went to said game. But, you know, all right, so the ceiling, I would agree. I think this is a very high ceiling team, but is there questions about the floor? I was texting with your podcast partner, Matt Fortuna, earlier today. And, you know, something that Matt brought up that I think is fair is that there is a lot of leadership that walked out the door. Mm-hmm. Xavier Watts was a captain. He was a multi-time All-American. Jack Kaiser was kind of Mr. Notre Dame 6 years. Howard Cross, even though he wasn't a captain, was a guy that was, you know, had been there forever. Riley Mills, when you looked at, you know, Riley Leonard, even though he was there for 1 year, from everything that I captured from afar, Pete, he was really respected, really beloved inside that locker room. So is there questions about leadership? Because it feels like this Notre Dame team is really talented and maybe the most talented team and the deepest team they've had maybe since the Holtz era. But it feels like stars are aligning for maybe 26 as opposed to 25, where it still could be great. What's the floor on this Notre Dame team? What could go wrong for Notre Dame this year?
You know, I think that if you trot Carr and or Kenny Minchie out there at Miami and they lose and they look bad, and then the coaches have some indecision of like, did we start the wrong guy? I could see this staff maybe sort of overthinking the quarterback position a little bit. I think that's what could go wrong. That might be one thing.
Let me jump in there real quickly. How good is CJ Carr in your opinion? What have you seen from him? What have you heard from the coaching staff? How good is CJ Carr? How good can CJ Carr be?
I think he's good right now. I think he can be great. It's hard for me to get over the fact that we've seen four open spring practices the last 2 years, and Carr's been there for all of them and healthy for all of them. He was clearly the best quarterback in three of them, and the other one, he was probably the best quarterback. So,
and who was on the roster?
You know, it was Kenny Minchie, Steve Angeli. We never saw him go head to head in a practice with Riley Leonard, but it's not just that he was the best one. It's the fact that he throws people open. He layers passes. The game looks slow to him, even though he has no reason for the game to be slow. It will be a million miles an hour in Miami. There's no doubt on that. But I don't think it's going to take him very long for it to like click. As long as they avoid like a Miami 2017 situation where you're just like, oh my God, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I think that he will grow in that position and be really good. Maybe by November. And that's, to me, it's like you have to get out of September with just one loss. Because if you do, Carr will be getting better. The line will be getting better. And I think Notre Dame will be a much better team in November than in September. And I guess every team could say that. I just think it will be very acutely felt with this Notre Dame team. So I think Carr's got a chance to be great at Notre Dame. This year he probably just needs to be good. But to your point about like building for 26, like I felt that way about a year ago. And then you're like, well, Jeremiah Love's gone. Jadarian Price is probably gone. Who knows what the offensive line looks like? The secondary might turn over. What happens with a Don Shuler and or Christian Gray? Do you lose a linebacker unexpectedly? What happens along the defensive line? Like I don't think that Notre Dame should look at 2026 as a better shot than 2025. I think they've got a great shot in 2025 and maybe a better shot in 2025 than 2026, depending on how next year's roster shakes out. Never mind like what next year's coaching staff looks like.
Yeah. No, I mean, you look at a lot of things about Notre Dame. You look at a lot of things about college football this year. And, you know, a theme of this podcast, Pete, has been the uncertainty at the quarterback position amongst the eight perceived best teams in the country, whether it be Alabama, whether it be Georgia, I'll throw in Texas, Oregon, and Notre Dame, certainly a part of that as well. So running backs, we all know Jeremiah Love, and as you pointed out, he's a special, special player. How good is this running back room? And with that offensive line now sidelined is Charles Jagasaw. Can this be one of those kind of road grading type of Notre Dame teams where we've seen in the past where, you know, we're going deep cut here, but when Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey were on one side of the offensive line and you could just see the defense was just dead by the second half with a backfield of Love, Price, Aeneas Williams, Kedron Young, can Notre Dame just kind of pound teams into the ground and into submission?
I don't think that they're going to pound anyone into submission early on. I think that they could like big play you into submission with Jeremiah Love, though. You know, and maybe the end result would look like Josh Adams in 2017, but like Josh Adams in 2017, maybe he would run through some tackles. He didn't hurdle anybody. I'm not sure he ran away from a whole lot of people. Like he had very clean running lanes to work with. Jeremiah Love doesn't need those. So I just think that this offense, I think Eli Raritan, I have probably more confidence in him than at his tape would warrant. But I know just talking to Mike Denbrock and people around Notre Dame, they feel like what he showed in spring practice was legit and he'll be a quintessential Notre Dame tight end. If that happens on top of Malachi Fields and Jaden Greyhouse and Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, like you've got a real pain in the butt to deal with if you're a defense. And like, not that the quarterback is the least of your concerns, but he can kind of facilitate. You look back at that 2017 team, like, Brandon Wimbush was not an accurate passer and teams eventually found that out and then just stuffed the box. I don't think you're going to be able to take stuff away from CJ Carr quite like that. I think it's a very talented skill position group. You just sort of need the quarterback to knit it all together when you know, maybe the run game is kind of being taken away a little bit or overloaded by the defense.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago, Pete, where you looked at the wide receiver room with Sam Hartman there. And I think Notre Dame fans were bullish, but nationally folks were like, I don't know about this. And I think overall the national thought process was accurate. I think you were of that mindset too. Last year, I thought it was a mixed bag. Riley Leonard, obviously, it was a different type of offense with him running the football. And then you had Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price both rushing for, you know, at the end of the day, Price, Love, and Leonard almost ran for 3,000 yards together. So it was a very run-heavy offense. How good are the wide receivers this year? We saw a glimpse of Jaden Greathouse in the playoff. Is he getting too much love? What should we expect from the Virginia transfer Malachi Fields? What do you expect to see from the wide receivers this year? Because I would say, and I'm curious your thoughts, for Notre Dame, the weakness has been their wide receivers in the Freeman era.
Yeah, it has been. And I don't want to make this group sound like it's LSU 2019, but it's better than they were last year, and it's miles better than they were under Sam Hartman when they were – I mean, they – to me, they were
They had to go to a lacrosse player in October for a spark.
They were a group of five level receiver room that year. I mean, they were bad. They were not a talented group at all. They had some guys who were poor evaluations, didn't develop. So this year, I think the proven production at the power four level is significant. Like, this isn't Chris Mitchell, 1,000-yard receiver at Florida International or Florida Atlantic, whichever one he played at. It's not Jaden Harrison at Marshall.
Even Bo Collins, I'll say this, you know, he had the big catch against Texas A&M and should have been flagged for personal foul, but we'll leave that to the side here. I remember I forget who it was. It was someone who played at Clemson.
ACC Eric McClain.
And he was like, yeah, best of luck. Like, oh man, we're going to miss him. It was like, yeah, we'll be all right.
It was, I think the question to him by Mike co-host Matt Fortuna was, how much does Clemson miss Bo Collins? And Eric's answer was, you can have him. Like, that's, no one at Virginia is like, you can have Malachi Fields. It just, I think Bo Collins needed a change of scenery because he, the clock was running out on him at Clemson. Malachi Fields had a, do I want to go to the NFL and try to hack it? Or do I want to keep playing college football and hack it? And I talked to Ian Book about this the other week when I sat down with him, because he's throwing with the receivers and working with the quarterbacks a little bit. And I was like, all right, give me a comp for Malachi Fields. And he was like, he's not Chase Claypool. So like, let's not get carried away about Malachi Fields. But he reminded him of 2018 Miles Boykin as a big boundary receiver who can go up and make contested catches and knows how to catch the fade ball. Not like a freak like Claypool was, but a really good college player. And Notre Dame hasn't had enough really good college players at wide receiver lately, but now I think they probably got at least two, maybe two and a half, depending on how you want to break up Will Pauling and Jordan Faison. But I think their top four are really good, and they can finally create some matchup problems. Like in the past, if Notre Dame had one good receiver, no problem, just take him away if you're a secondary. Now it's like, do you want to do Fields or Greathouse or Faison or Pauling? I think that, or Eli Raerden. It's a much healthier spot for Notre Dame at receiver. I think they can mix and match with those top four. Beyond those top four, I don't really like what they have, but those top four, I think, have a chance to be really good.
All right, defensively, last year, this was a team that was pretty darn good. I don't know if they were elite, but they were really, really good. And you lose Xavier Watts, you lose Jack Kaiser, who is kind of a fixer out there on the field, and you lose Al Golden, which I think is overlooked a little bit when people do deep dives on the Irish. The guy was a magician. What he did in his 3 years in South Bend, won the Broyles Award. So you bring in a new D coordinator. Let's start there. There were no other changes on the coaching staff. So how has that been from your reporting so far with the rest of the coaches bringing in a new defensive coordinator? Have they jived with him? Has it gone all right? And is Chris Ash, who is, you know, had high profile gigs before, is he expected to change things up? What is the expectation for him when he takes over this borderline elite defense from a year ago?
I think that with the staff returning, Al Washington, Max Bolla, Mike Mickens, coaching at the three levels, like, it's on Chris Ash to fit in to Notre Dame more than Notre Dame is to fit with Chris Ash. I think that's Chris Ash's perspective as well. So that's good. I think that they come at this from a healthy point of view. I don't, you know, are they going to play a little bit more zone than they did with Al Golden? Probably. Does that make more sense? Cause you don't have Xavier Watts at the back of the defense. Absolutely. So I think we'll probably overdo the scheme change and undersell, like, hey, the personnel's different, so you have to adapt. Maybe you can do more with your linebackers because you have Drake Bowen, Kingston Viliamasa, Jalen Snead, like, as like really, really good athletes. You know, maybe you can do more with your pass rush because your defensive ends, I think, have a chance to be terrors on the outside. And last year they were just like kind of good after they had some injuries in September. So I think the defense should be really good. I think Al Golden was elite. I'm not asking Chris Ash to be elite. I don't think they need him to be elite. He just needs to be a very good defensive coordinator. Cause I mean, Al Golden was at the top of his game and in year three, I think it's pretty unrealistic to expect Chris Ash to be that good out of the gate.
What is it about Marcus Freeman? And it's funny, I was thinking back to last summer. I had just finished up a show, and, you know, me and my co-host at the time, Jonathan Von Tobel, we walk out to the bar to get a drink, and there's a gentleman there, maybe I've had a couple cocktails, shocking, it's Vegas, and he says, you know, what do you need to do? You just need to fade Notre Dame every game. This team is overrated in the odds maker's eyes. And I'm like, you know, you're probably not wrong from – you know, the 90s and the 2000s, when this was a wildly inconsistent program. The last 2 years, Notre Dame is 22-6-2 against the spread. It is ridiculous. They are covering at almost 78% clip and by 8.5 points per game. What is it about Marcus Freeman, Pete, in these last 2 years? And yes, insert your jokes about Northern Illinois, that's fine. They still went on and ran the table and made it to the championship game with wins over Georgia and Penn State. What is it about Marcus Freeman that this team is not only winning, but kind of beating the shit out of teams?
Yeah, I think it's an attitude from the head coach, and the players pick it up. I think they're out to just run people off the field, and there's not a, okay, just get the lead and hold on, we'll save it for next week. It's much more like, let's burn it out now. And the players like that. I think there's a good relationship between the players and the coaching staff about, like, if we put this stuff in practice, if we work our butts off Sunday to Saturday, you're going to let us, you know, use it. We're going to be able to spill everything that we've been working on all week that, you know, we've been, you know, pounding each other into the ground about. And the players really respect that. It's like, why do they run the fake field goal in the fourth quarter against Georgia Tech? Because they could. They wanted to. They worked on it. They thought it was a good look, and so they ran it. And I think the players really respond to that stuff. You know, you see that with, you know, how much man defense they play and how much they go for it on fourth down, the fakes that they run. I just think that there's a really aggressive mindset from the head coach that the players love. I think last year's roster was set up to be aggressive. You know, not every team is built that way at Notre Dame. But, yeah, I think that the spreads, and you're way more familiar with that kind of stuff than I am, probably doesn't account all that well for a coach trying to prove a point to his own roster. But I think that Marcus Freeman did a great job of that last year, and the players really responded to it.
So I got to ask you this before we get out of here, because I remember I was doing a hit with the local ABC channel in South Bend the week after Texas A&M. It was Northern Illinois. And I said, you know, my favorite play is Northern Illinois first half. I think it'll be a sluggish start. Little did I know, Notre Dame would actually lose the game outright as a 28-point favorite. And there's been a couple of moments in Marcus Freeman's short tenure, and the positives obviously have way, way, way outweighed the negatives. But you think about how much effort he put into the Ohio State game in his first game, and they go out and they lose to Marshall as a 20-point favorite in week two. The Texas A&M game, correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, when he was asked by, I don't know if it was you or a fellow colleague, he said he didn't even know who they were playing in week two.
Yeah,
that did not work out well.
Little did we know.
Not a good look there for him. And to be honest, after they had the heartbreaking loss to Ohio State, you know, albeit Duke is not Northern Illinois or Marshall, they were very much on the ropes, and they needed a magical fourth and, what, 15 scramble from Sam Hartman, where he went John Elway, in order to keep that drive alive, and they end up winning that game 21-14. They were very much in, you know, in losing territory of that one. Looking at the schedule this year, you know, I think NC State could be weird, sandwiched in between Boise State and USC. I know this will be a team pretty fired up to play USC this year. I think Pittsburgh with the Nard Dope in Pittsburgh, I think that could be a weird one with Pittsburgh coming off a bye. That's always just kind of a strange place for Notre Dame historically. Even the last couple times they played them, they've kicked their ass. What is the game this year that Notre Dame could potentially be tripped up? Because while Notre Dame is going to be a favorite in all 12 games, Pete, there are more, in my opinion, potential landmines out there on this schedule. There are some weird spots on this schedule.
There are. I probably overvalue, like, if it wasn't Narduzzi, I probably would dismiss Pittsburgh outright because I just don't think they're very good. It's like, but Narduzzi just gets something stuck somewhere with Notre Dame. You know, O'Brien at Boston College, like, is that going to be a great spot for Notre Dame? I don't know. I think at Arkansas is going to be weird, you know, especially the way that the beginning of the schedule is shaking out. NC State at home right before USC, but
it's
after
the Peacock
Arkansas
game too. I think Notre Dame has never covered a Peacock game.
No, and that's like, I think Toledo was the first Peacock game.
Yeah, they should have lost that game.
That was really bad. So
UNLV was not pretty. They won but didn't cover. It was kind of clunky. Yeah, the Peacock exclusive has never been.
Yeah, it was Louisville last year, if I'm not mistaken.
It was, yes, and they pulled that one out, which was
a nail biter, crazy drunk game. But I think that there's just a handful of those games. I have described the schedule as like, I think they played Georgia Tech five times, but if Georgia Tech had Haynes King healthy, like that Notre Dame staff, not that they were worried about going to Georgia Tech, but they were like, yeah, God, I don't know. Like
they wore white pants too.
Something about them looks like they could give us an issue. And I think there's a lot of teams on the schedule where Notre Dame will look at it and be like, man, it's something about this team could give us an issue. And if you can lose one of those games, even if you split the first two, but I think there probably will be some tension in more games this year than there were last year. I mean, that I wouldn't expect Marcus Freeman to go 10-2 against the spread this year. I think maybe that Vegas will have figured him out a little bit. And in some ways I think, you know, maybe they'll kind of revert to the mean and they will suddenly not be a great ATS type of program.
Yeah. Vegas isn't really in the business of getting their butt whipped by one particular team every year. And, you know, and that's a reason why they're a 7.5 point favorite at one sports book against Texas A&M at home. That's a big spread, but Vegas has given them the benefit of the doubt that this is a very talented roster. Pete, appreciate it, man. This is a really good insight. And, you know, hopefully the next time I call on you, it's not because Charles Jagasaw got hurt, because I believe your last two appearances on this podcast have been because Notre Dame's starting offensive lineman Charles Jagasaw got hurt.
No more of that, please, if you're Notre Dame.
Pete Sampson at Pete Sampson _ The Independent Podcast. All right, that's going to do it for our podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back later this week with Phil Steele right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.